From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, could the border wall be coming sooner than expected to the Santa Ana National Refuge in the Rio Grande Valley? How a border wall impacts endangered species, and a libertarian experiment in municipal government, how's life in the freest little town in Texas? This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Donald Trump ran for president with the chant, "Build that wall," and the promise that Mexico would pay for it. However, getting Mexico to foot the bill for the controversial barrier doesn't seem to be happening, and the wall's construction still needs to win congressional approval. On Thursday, Texas Senator John Cornyn rolled out legislation that appears to back away in part from Trump's promise of a big, beautiful wall that would stretch across the entire U.S.-Mexico border. The Republican Senate Majority Whip is pushing his compromise solution called Building America's Trust Act. It is a $15 billion proposal that would include some wall with fences, levees, technology, more border security personnel, and some other barriers. The bill would also target so-called sanctuary cities and pressure them to cooperate with federal immigration officials. Meanwhile, the border wall could be coming sooner than expected to Texas. Advance work is already underway at the Santa Ana National Refuge in the Rio Grande Valley. The Santa Ana National Refuge is one of the few places where the old Rio Grande Forest still stands. Thick with thorny brush and trees, the droning call of the chicharras, this is a place filled with life. The refuge is home to exotic birds and rare wildcats, including the ocelot.
Santa Ana has got one of the highest rates of biodiversity of any national wildlife refuge in the United States.
Scott Nickel is with the Sierra Club Borderlands Campaign.
It's also in the middle of the wildlife corridor that was created to give ocelots the ability to access habitat all up and down the Rio Grande.
The federal government purchased the 2,088 acres for the refuge in 1943 to preserve this disappearing habitat. And because this is federally owned land, building a segment of the border wall here would avoid many of the problems that arise with seizure of private property. Nichols says, according to an unnamed U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service official, that's what's happening.
All of those meetings have been held in secret, so we don't really know what the full plans are. But it has been leaked that they want to wall off Santa Ana.
Jim Chapman is with Friends of the Wildlife Corridor. He says he spoke to officials who took part in a recent meeting where Customs and Border Protection revealed the plan for building the border wall at the Santa Ana National Refuge. CPB has not confirmed whether or not that meeting took place.
The entire refuge was going to be walled off with an 18-foot concrete wall with a 12-foot steel fence on top of that. The refuge would be cleared 150 feet into the refuge, a so-called enforcement zone, and that enforcement zone would be lit, illuminated all night, every night.
Chapman says the wall would keep visitors from enjoying the refuge, and it would trap wildlife when waters rise. He thinks the constant floodlights would harm the nocturnal ocelot.
You could not design something more damaging. If they tried real hard, they really, really could not come up with something worse.
Chapman says he was at the refuge several days after the alleged meeting, and he says he saw a work crew on the levee where the wall would be built.
So I walked up there and asked them what they were doing, and they were drilling soil samples along the levee. They didn't mention anything about a wall. When you're drilling exactly where the wall would go, and you're drilling 40 feet down, it's pretty obvious.
Mariana Trevino Wright of the Rio Grande Valley's National Butterfly Center says she had a similar experience.
I was stunned to see them, and I said, "Hey guys, what are you doing?" And they said, "Working." And I said, "Working on what?" And they said, "On clearing this land." And I said, "You mean my land?"
What was once onion farmland, the 100-acre National Butterfly Center, is restored natural habitat for migratory birds and butterflies like the monarch. Trevino Wright says she caught a work crew as they were cutting down trees and widening a dirt road on her private property, which leads to the Rio Grande. She says CPB officials told her that they would investigate the trespassing, but she has yet to get a satisfactory explanation about why the crew was at the Butterfly Center and if there's a plan to build the border wall on their land.
There has been zero engagement of our organization or of us as private landowners.
U.S. Congressman Henry Cuellar, a border wall opponent, says he's also having trouble getting information about what's happening. The Texas Democrat represents District 28, which covers part of the border. He says Homeland Security does not have the money to build the border wall, and nothing can be built, even at the Santa Ana National Refuge.
We asked this specific question to CBP headquarters, and they're saying they cannot shift money around. So they would have to wait for this new appropriation bill, the $1.6 billion that we're hoping that we can stop.
Cuellar says there's a lot of fear and confusion about the border wall, and the CPB should be doing a better job of engaging and communicating with local communities.
They should get more information out.
Customs and Border Protection did not respond to request for comment on the story. The concern that a border wall would be built across the Rio Grande Valley's levee has many people there concerned, but also environmentalists and biologists around the world. They're warning that a border wall would be harmful to endangered species who live along the Rio Grande. Scott Egan is a professor of ecology and environmental biology at Rice University. He says the border wall would put more than 100 endangered species at risk.
I'm an evolutionary biologist, so I think about populations and their health through time. I think about things like migration and gene flow as being very important to the health of populations. By putting a barrier to migration and gene flow, especially for endangered species, but this would be a phenomenon in all species, you can have two major impacts. One is something called a population bottleneck, which is a sharp reduction in the size of the population because you put a barrier between them, which affects the genetic variation in that population. Reducing genetic variation in populations limits those populations' ability to survive new challenges in the environment, things like climate change or shifts in available resources. The second phenomenon that can occur that's also related to reducing population sizes is that increases the chance for inbreeding. Inbreeding can then cause an increase in the expression of deleterious genetic mutations. So as scientists studying these problems, we've actually observed what happens when you put a barrier to migration between populations, especially of endangered species. So, for example, the Florida panther is an excellent example of this. That was a continuous population throughout the entire southeastern United States. But it was eventually some populations in Florida were isolated due to habitat change and overhunting. And these exact phenomena, which evolutionary biologists predicted would happen, did happen. They had an increase in inbreeding. They had a decrease in genetic variation, and that's led to heart abnormalities among the Florida panther, higher infection rates, and a decrease in their reproductive abilities due to these effects.
What are some of the animals that would face these challenges if the border wall was put up along the Rio Grande?
So one of the ones that is a favorite of mine, and it's one I've followed and always looked for when I've been down in South Texas, is a beautiful small predatory cat called the jaguarundi. That species has a distribution that just touches into Texas. And so by isolating those rare populations in Texas, these exact phenomena would happen to the jaguarundi because it wouldn't be connected. The same thing would be true for jaguars. Those jaguars that are seen in southern Arizona every once in a while would be isolated from the rest of the population. Ocelots, Mexican gray wolves, all of these would be affected by a border wall that would reduce migration between populations.
The border wall also would act as a barrier for animals just seeking water.
Absolutely. That is a phenomenon we have documented when we as humans have put up barriers to migration all across the globe. An excellent example of this comes from a border wall put up between Pakistan and India. They put a barrier between those two regions, which stopped the ability of the black bears that lived in that area and a predatory cat, I think it's a leopard that lived in that area, to find resources or to find mates. That led them to start drifting along the wall into human populations, looking for water, looking for food, eventually targeting humans as prey because they were separated from the resources they regularly moved and found.
But it's not just the physical barrier of the wall that's being discussed. There's also in the plans to clear cut certain stretches along the border wall so that the Border Patrol agents could get a clear view of what's happening. And then also put up floodlights that would be shining basically anytime it's dark. Essentially that area would be illuminated 24/7. And that would be a change in habitat.
Absolutely. Animals and plants respond to the natural day-night cycle, and they require that for their natural behaviors. And interrupting that with 24 hours of light will affect populations locally in that area, absolutely.
Another animal that's frequently talked about, I think you mentioned it, the ocelot. Can you talk about that?
Oh, it's a beautiful small predatory cat. Lives in South Texas and is distributed across the border in Mexico. Wonderfully charismatic animal. And isolating the populations that are already threatened here in Texas would be catastrophic to that species. Immediate sharp reduction in genetic variation due to a lack of migration between populations, an increase in inbreeding depression causing deleterious genetic mutations to be expressed more often will all affect the ocelot, just like they have affected the Florida panther over the last two or three decades.
We have an Endangered Species Act supposed to protect these animals. That should come into play, right?
Absolutely. I mean, as it relates to endangered species, that's what it's there for. It's meant to protect those species, and the spirit behind that law is not just to protect the species alone, but to protect the role they play in the environment and the health of the ecosystem, that same ecosystem that gives humans many benefits. So a lot of the areas around the border, especially in South Texas, are agricultural regions, and by disrupting the natural flow of animals and plants and pollinators, that has effects directly on humans, too. And that's the spirit behind, you know, these Endangered Species Acts. They play an important role in the environment with which we share and the health of the environment and for everyone. But as a biologist, I don't think this is a single issue as well. I understand this is a complex issue. I just want these issues to be part of the conversation.
But the Endangered Species Act could be waved aside by Homeland Security. And we've seen that happen already in the San Diego area as they prepare for an increased wall building over there. And
Correct.
What's happened before when they built the first round of walls in South Texas, all it really takes is the signing of some paperwork by the Secretary of Homeland Security and no more Endangered Species Act in regards to wall building.
Correct. Right. And that just goes into this is a complex issue. There's lots of different aspects of the problem that we as a society, as a country, need to think about.
So you want people to weigh this information, that a border wall, as we talk about it, to control immigration, which you don't really have anything to say about that, because that's not your field, but you can just inform people, like, this is a complex issue, and be aware that when we talk about this, this is what's going to happen to the environment.
Right. I don't hear a discussion of the health of the environment, the health of the amazing biodiversity that lives along the border between the U.S. and Mexico being part of that discussion enough right now. And that's one thing I want to remind folks.
Scott Egan is a professor of ecology and environmental biology at Rice University. He says the border wall would put more than 100 endangered species at risk. In the last legislative session, a bill to limit city annexations seemed on its way to passing the Senate. Then it was filibustered by Senator Jose Menendez, a San Antonio Democrat. no problem for supporters of the bill because it's one of the items in the current special session, and it already has passed the Senate. City annexations is an area of concern for many, especially for those who live in unincorporated areas outside of big cities. They run the risk of being annexed and being brought under the umbrella of the city government and its ordinances and property taxes. This is what faced the community of Von Army, just south of San Antonio. James McCandless wrote for the Texas Observer about how Von Army came up with a daring solution. They would incorporate, but in a very special way. McCandless's feature is called The Rise and Fall of the Freest Little City in Texas, How a Libertarian Experiment in City Government Fell Apart Over Taxes, Debt, and Some Very Angry People.
They believed that San Antonio was going to encroach and eventually swallow up their land by way of annexation. They had some basis in their fear because that was happening a lot. San Antonio was beginning to look south for land, and they wanted to get ahead of that and say that they could provide basic services to the people of the area at a much lower cost.
How are they going to do that?
They plan to do that by basically having a property tax in the beginning and then zeroing that out over time while attracting more businesses to maintain a sales tax and bring in enough revenue from that to fund their services.
Did that work?
Not at all. They had a very hard time attracting businesses at all because they have no connection to the sewer line for the area.
You didn't get big box stores.
Yeah, that's right. They were told by the San Antonio Water System that it would take upwards of $4 million to connect them to their sewer line. And they only had about $500,000, and they didn't want to take on any debt from a bond. So that was dead in the water.
So not taking on debt from the bond, that comes because debt is bad, according to the people who preach the doctrine of Liberty Cities. Now, this is what they promised Von Army would be, a Liberty City. So what is a Liberty City?
Liberty City is basically there are no taxes. There is little regulation as possible. So people are allowed to live as, quote unquote, freely as they want.
So if you wanted to pop fireworks,
yeah.
Pop fireworks. If you wanted to put cars on blocks in your front yard, go for
no
it.
No one's going to stop you.
Nothing's going to stop you because it's free, free city, liberty. And who was the main preacher of Liberty City Gospel?
That was R. Martinez de Vara. At the time, you know, around 2006, 2007, he was a law student at St. Mary's University. And he... basically, through a series of town meetings, he convinced a lot of the town to embrace this utopian idea, basically.
So he told them, I got a deal for you. We can incorporate, we can avoid the city of San Antonio from gobbling us up, and we can take advantage of our sales tax and get rid of the property tax. Did that actually happen? Is there a property tax today in Von Army?
No, there wasn't a property. It was eliminated in 2015. It stands at zero. I think it was about 22 cents per $100 of value when they zeroed it out. And that's been gone for a couple of years now.
So it sounds like a success story. You know, they have no property taxes. They weren't annexed by the city of San Antonio.
It would be a success story if they had a police department, a fire department, an animal control department, or any city services.
I mean, do they need those things?
A lot of citizens believe they need those things, yeah.
But they're not paying taxes. So how can you expect to have those things if you're not going to pay a tax?
That's a good catch-22. That's a lot of citizens that think that they would do better if they had their own police department so that they wouldn't fear, you know, response time issues or anything like that. They could just...
Or the house is burning down. They have no one to call.
There are a lot of houses next to a very empty fire department that they wish they could start up again.
Is this a... This is a social experiment, a political experiment that that we can learn from?
Well, Martinez de Vara himself called it a experimentation with democracy. And the results of Born Bear, that just doesn't work. So it's worth to point out that he's gone on to form other Liberty Cities in other areas of Texas that have kept their property tax. So there is potential for it, but you need some tax base.
Right. There's one near Seguin. Was it Kingsbury?
Yeah, Kingsbury.
And they are they have a property tax, even though they started out with the vision of being a liberty city?
I believe so. They're fairly newer. I could point to Ivanhoe, a couple other places that have kept a property tax to fund their services.
Also, starting a city government brings in all this local politics, and that can be a huge headache in and of itself.
Yeah, and what it appeared to be is just sort of clashes between old families that spilled over into city politics that have lived there for generations. And that's basically where the lines were drawn on that.
So we had people infighting among the people who were elected to the city council. And Martinez de Vara, he was elected mayor, right?
Right.
Along with his mother? She was a city council person?
Yeah, she was a city council member for a long time, and she is the newly elected mayor. She was just elected in May.
And then they had other factions in the city that had a different vision for what to do with this Liberty City.
Right. There was a majority there were three members of the city council that thought that there should be at least some property tax as revenues were remaining stagnant and expenses kept rising. They thought it would be prudent to keep something.
And so these clashes became actually, the police were called in.
Yeah, they held an illegal meeting of three councilwomen.
Because they formed a shadow government.
That's basically what you. That's a fun way of saying it. Yeah, that they were they briefly formed, held a meeting. The city attorney told them that their meeting was potentially illegal and their actions could be voided in a court. And that's exactly what happened. Martinez de Vara found out about it, got a court to nullify those actions.
And they would have these city council meetings in a bar?
Yeah, at first it was in a church. That was when they very first started back in 2008. And then they moved into a bar, and then the bar owner kicked them out. And then they bought a mobile home, and that's where they hold their meetings now. That bar became a strip club that they are trying to get rid of right now, and that's just adding to their problems.
It's a strip club that's outside of the city of San Antonio's regulations, so it's able to go further than strip clubs that you would have.
Yes, that's their main point of advertising is that their dancers are all nude.
So Martinez de Vara also in his pitch to becoming the freest little city in Texas made a lot of promises about having an online city hall, that you wouldn't actually need a physical city hall because you could do it all online. So how's that going?
Well, the website's under construction right now and has been for a long time. So there's no place where you can get a permit online. You would have to go to that mobile home and ask the one staffer there for your permit to build anything or locate a business in town.
So it's really no online city hall. That didn't happen.
Right. That was just sort of a pipe dream that didn't really go anywhere.
They had an election just now. They could vote for city council representatives and mayors that could decide to change the way things are in Von Army and begin to put in a property taxes and begin to be able to borrow money and fix the streets and bring in the services of police and fire.
Their last election was basically a 50-50 split of about 200 people. Of a town about 1,300, that's not very many. A lot of people just don't care. If I talk to citizens in the diner or everywhere else, they seem to just not know about the troubles that were going on in the town. And
what would happen if their house caught fire? Did they know that they didn't have coverage?
I think they know that they don't have a local fire department, but they know that there is one sort of a mile or two away that they can rely on.
Okay, but they're fine with that. Well, you know, if this is what the people want, who are we to say whether it's good or bad?
I think the main current that I saw was that people just want to be left alone. I guess through whatever means, they won't really care if they live in a incorporated city or not. They just want to be left to their own devices.
James McCandless is a freelance writer living in San Antonio. His article is The Rise and Fall of the Freest Little City in Texas, How a Libertarian Experiment in City Government Fell Apart Over Taxes, Debt, and Some Very Angry People. It's the cover story for the current issue of the Texas Observer. Lead is a powerful neurotoxin that's especially harmful to children. Decades ago, it was banned from paint, gasoline, and water pipes, but it continues to be a hazard, especially in older neighborhoods. But the city of San Antonio is trying to fix the lead problem one house at a time. It's a hot July afternoon, but a crew of workmen aren't slowing down as they scrape away layers of old paint and brush on a fresh white coat on a home on San Antonio's near south side. The owner, Diana Benavides, says this work was long overdue.
Well, they're scraping it because it looked like I had potato chips as painting.
Benavides lives here with her daughter, who was wheelchair-bound from lupus. And from time to time, other relatives with small children are also part of the household.
They come and they go because they visit.
The house, built in 1923, needed a lot of work. And Benavides, who lives on a fixed income, couldn't afford the repairs.
Being that I'm on Social Security and my daughter's on SSI, it's very hard for us.
Fortunately for Benavides, the city of San Antonio was awarded a grant for lead remediation, $3.4 million from the Department of Housing and Urban Development.
We do about 100 homes a year.
Myrna Esquivel is the coordinator for the city of San Antonio Department of Planning and Community Development, Green and Healthy Homes Initiative. The program performs lead assessments and then removes or seals in the old lead. But not every home gets the full treatment.
It's not always a complete paint job, so every house is a little different, but the purpose is to address the lead hazard.
Esquivel says a family must meet certain requirements.
They have a house built before 78. They have a child under the age of 6, whether it's a child that lives there or visits. So we get a lot of grandparents' homes, too, that we address. And they have to be low income. They have to meet the income guidelines.
At the Benavides house, the lead contamination was traced back to old lead paint. Lead in paint was banned in 1978, but even almost 40 years later, the legacy of lead paint haunts older neighborhoods like this one.
78204.
78204.
I checked your list.
You checked my list. Exactly.
That's the infamous list.
Filing a Texas Open Records request with the Texas Department of Health and Human Services, Texas Public Radio found that there are 12 zip codes in San Antonio, including this one, where children are testing positive for lead poisoning at a higher percentage than the national average. In 2016, 78204 saw 5% of the children who were screened testing positive for lead poisoning with 5 micrograms of lead or higher per deciliter of blood. And that is the point that the federal government urges public health action. Two San Antonio zip codes, 78203 and 78212, had 4 times the national average. It's clear that lead in San Antonio is a highly localized problem that appears to be tied to older homes.
So anything that is within a chewable surface within 4 feet where a child can chew on, like the front corner board, that he's scraping the whole paint off right now. So that we have to do.
Willie Villarreal is the senior assessor for San Antonio, and he says the old-style windows is where they frequently find lead dust.
Old wooden sash windows that are operable go up and down, so all that creates dust, and that dust level on windowsills and floors right underneath it normally are very high.
San Antonio's program has been in existence for 17 years, and in that time, it's remediated over 1,000 homes. Little by little, chipping away at a massive problem, it adds up. But for Benavides, she says this program is a lifesaver.
Probably my house would have fallen apart.
She said without the old family house, she and her daughter would be homeless.
I was very concerned because it started to rot the wood.
The homestead is ready to provide many more years of shelter, but now it's also lead safe.
No more chips.
That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You can also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. And that's where you can find past Texas Matters programs to listen to. And you can find us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.